Welcome to the segment of Be Simply. Today we have special guest Jesus Trejo. He is a comedian, he is an actor, he is a writer and a published children's author. He is legit funny. So I'm so excited to have him here in person with me. And without further ado, let's dive in with Jesus. So it's so wonderful to have you here, Jesus.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the tea.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I really enjoy the tea in our conversations always.
So. Yeah, we're doing it very different this time. I'm going to dive into all your creative work.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
So I have this thought this morning. I'm like, were you a comedian as a kid?
I wouldn't say that I was a comedian. Rather than, I think from a very young age, I was attracted, like, you know, any kid who's like, anything that's going to bring a laughter to your peers or to the grown-ups in your life, you know, it's like, I felt like I was oddly, like, attracted to that.
Okay.
I do remember my grandfather being very funny. He did a lot of, like, riddles and rhyming and that kind of thing, and that kind of, I think, stuck with me.
Inspired you.
Yeah, inspired me quite a bit. My mom was a very animated person. You know, she was like, I think both of my parents are very funny. Like, my dad is like, he's the type that, like, he doesn't know he's funny, but it's like, oh, you're so funny.
Right.
Like, you would be the last one to know, because he's so, like, he's such like, he commits to the bit, if that makes sense. He's just like, he's himself, and that's it. There's no room for anything. Mm-mm. And my mom was very much the same, but she was very animated. So I think I get a lot of my humor from, my inspiration was my grandfather and my parents.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that's where it came from.
Yeah, and did you get them to laugh? Like, did they laugh at you so that you had a good feedback loop?
Well, actually, that's interesting. So I think my mom would laugh, right? Mm-hmm. She would always laugh, and... you know, she would just say, you think of all these weird things. It's like, you're out there kind of thing. And in a positive way, it's like, man, your brain is so out there.
Right.
And I think my dad was always kind of fighting against it. You know, he's just like, hey, behave, be serious. People are not going to take you serious. I'm like, well, that's good. That's kind of what I want. He's like, no, you don't want that. You want, because my dad was very much a,
right.
is a very much, you know, straight shooter. You know, it's like. He commands respect, but he gives so much respect to people around him. But he's always kind of the serious guy. So, you know, my dad, even to this day, like, I will say a joke or some silly thing, he'll laugh and they'll be like, all right, stop, you know. I bought a whoopee cushion the other day. My dad was like, oh, no, here we go again.
Oh,
it was triggering for him. He goes, oh, he's like, I remember this. I can't tell you how many times he cut whooping cushions in half and just left them there to send a message. It was like,
oh, because he didn't like you playing the jokes.
No. So he wouldn't throw it away. He would just like cut it and put it back in my hiding place, and then I find it, I'm like, oh, again. But I bought one the other day, and it was a kind of a very funny thing where he was just like, this is funny, but stop making the sound.
Yeah. That's awesome. Little did he know what your future held, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is, because, you know, it's like, you know, my parents put a lot of emphasis on education. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, because my parents didn't know how to read or write in their own language, you know, let alone English. It was a big, that was our meal ticket, you know. Mm-hmm. If you can get an education,
right.
And if you can read and write, it's like the world is yours for the taking, because, you know, combined, mm-hmm. they had practically no schooling between the both of them. So it was kind of like, you know, going to school, you know, graduating, you know, going through the school system of kinder to 12th grade, and then going to college and graduating college. And then at that point, getting the news that I'm like, hey, I want to be a comedian. My dad's like, man, if you wanted to be a clown, you like, you don't need to go to college to be a clown. I'm like, actually, you do. So... Aww. So I think there was always this kind of, like, they had no idea, and it took, maybe that was like the driving force behind me working so hard and treating funny business very serious.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like, I have to, you know, I have responsibilities, you know, which was my loved ones closest to me, which, you know, my mom and dad for So
beautiful. Well, and share a little bit. You're reminding me of my friend Nipun. He was in the tech industry. His parents immigrated from India. Mm-hmm. And so that both he and his brother were first generation, graduated, you know, here in the U.S., all that kind of stuff. But he realized he just couldn't do it. Like, he couldn't do the tech thing. Mm-hmm. So he's completely committed to service and sold everything. And he and his wife walked around India for 2 years with nothing but their clothes on their back in a full act of trust. And his parents were like, what are you doing? Like, so it's interesting, but I applaud both of you for pursuing your dreams despite the opposition that you were getting from your parents.
It sounds like you figured it out, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, when I hear stories of like, you know, some massive pivot in the eyes of most people, they're like, well, what are you doing? But, you know, hearing you in two sentences kind of describe what happened with your friend, it's like, it sounds like you figured it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, the older I get, I feel like, ooh, like, mm-hmm. like, how do you do that? That's making it to me, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, when you find your purpose, you know, I felt like I found mine, which was to make people laugh, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely.
It takes time, but it's like, I don't know that my parents or anyone when I was younger could kind of point and be like, oh, it might be a comedian or this kind of thing. It just kind of happened. It's like, I'm very lucky that I stumbled on my calling. And, you know, somebody who I've worked with before is Pauly Shore, you know. And one of the things I remember him saying early on when I met him, he's like, you don't choose comedy. Comedy chooses you.
I would believe that.
Yeah, it's like, because you can try and to work towards something, but it's like sometimes you are met with certain level of resistance, and you find that in certain aspects you kind of like do this thing, and it's like people always say without even trying, but it's like it's not that you're not even trying, it's just that it's aligning perfectly. There's less resistance, you know. You're like, I don't know, your mind, body, and way of thinking is optimum for this line of work.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And how old were you when you first got on stage or tried?
So it was like, I tried it. I was 20 years old when I first went on stage as a stand-up to do the stand-up thing, right? I was in college, and I wanted to try it. So, you know, I was going to Cal State Dominguez. I was studying marketing. You know, I first started off doing the computer thing.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at it. You know, I thought I was going to be like a... software engineer, maybe electrical engineer, to kind of work on like hardware components to like computers. That's what I did in high school. The last 2 years were focused, actually my high school was focused on two things, which was I took an animation course here in Wilson, and I stuck with it for a few years. We would do like table tests, you know, it's like old school 2D cartoons, you know, cycles and this kind of thing. So I felt like it was either art or computers, and I felt like with animation, both of those worlds came to me, and it was funny.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that the funny was what was calling me. Mm. You know, it's like the animation, it's like I really enjoyed it, but it's like walk cycles and bounce, you know, these subtleties. And, you know, I love cartoons, I love comic strips, and it was like, I love computers. It was a perfect storm. As I get into college, my parents were telling me, it's like, you're not gonna... This is kind of the motif, right? So it's like my parents are like, you're not going to college to draw, right? It's like, you could stay here and draw, you know? And if you want to draw, my dad was like, you're going to go work with me doing landscaping. It's like, you're not staying home and drawing. You can draw when you get home from work kind of thing.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
So I was like, all right. So maybe business, you know? I'm like, oh, something in business would make my parents happy and also would provide what I felt was like a stable income, right?
Yeah.
All that changed when I'm like, I get on stage at 20, I'm in college, I'm like, oh, this is it. And I was very terrible. Like, I completely bombed. I mean, I was, like, in all honesty, I was completely bombing on stage for the first 5 years without fail. I probably had insanely small glimpses that I don't think anyone saw but myself, where I'm like, that was worth it, you know? But it's like the ROI for everyone that would see me or know it was like, it's bad. This is like beyond negative ROI, you know? So at that point, it's like I stick with college, I do marketing, And I was like, ooh, like I was doing finance and I switched that because I'm like, ooh, I can get out of here
yeah.
in 4 years flat, which is if I did marketing because it came to me a little easier, you know, yeah. it's like it was the path of least resistance for me. So I'm like, oh, what if I just change it to marketing because the degree is going to say business administration and in parentheses would be marketing. No one right. would really pay attention to that, you know? And so I was able to do that. So by the time I graduated college, I was like all in. And I found myself working at the Comedy Store. You nice. Know, it's like, so now I'm taking the skill set that my parents gave me, which was work very hard. You know, it's like, you know, how do you get your foot in the door? It was always like, do the things that people don't want to do. And that was maintenance. I did maintenance at the mm-hmm. Comedy Store with a college degree. And my dad was like, he's like, you really outdid yourself here. It's like your college Aww. Degree and you're parking cars. It's like, you know, and in my parents' defense is like, how do I make it make sense to them? You yeah. know, it's like, I have a degree, but I'm parking cars and cleaning bathrooms for 3 minutes, 3 minutes of stage time a week, possibly 2 3-minute sets a week at the world famous Comedy Store. And they're like, that doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I actually, the older I get, I give more and more credit to my parents of like, as much as they were not on board with it, they still, for the most part, kept their cool with my crazy decision. You right. know? And I don't know that I would have said that even just a few years ago, but I can mm-hmm. say it now because I'm like, oh, that's a gift. And I didn't realize it at right. the time. I was too blinded by my dream. It was very egocentric in, right. in the beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. But now, like, as time went on, it's like my priority was to give back to my parents. So,
yeah.
So, I'm 20 years old. That's when I start. I'm, 37 now, 17 years later. I can tell you that those first few years those first 5 years are like, are you sure you want to do this?
Right.
And if you can get through that and you still find an intrinsic ROI that's fulfilling, then yeah. you're meant to do the thing, right?
Right.
A lot of resistance, right? It kind of contradicts what I'm saying. There was a lot of resistance, but then something happened, right?
Yeah.
It clicked.
Yeah.
And then I started kind of getting better and, you know, just beefing up different quadrants as a comedian, which is writing or stage presence, getting better at the business, maybe learning how to network a little better or learning how to conduct myself professionally with, you know, within this business that's very complex. And as time went on, I think I was able to earn the trust. Trust is a big one. Trust and respect of maybe my peers, which mm-hmm. in the end we find out that is your biggest supporter, you know, your yeah. peers who will champion your name in rooms that you haven't been in, but, you know, they will, you know, they keep you in mind.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And would you say that drive that you had, because that's, it's almost like you're reminding me of like an athlete, like they want to like master a race, but they have to keep going for it, you know?
Yeah.
Would you say it's that drive that was kept pulling you, and maybe to prove to your parents that you could do this? Was that a factor too?
Yeah. I think, you know, as you said, so you remind me of an athlete. I blush because I've never been athletic, you know? Can't even catch athlete's foot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was me trying to, let's see, in the equation of, you know, how you get, you know, going in this business. I don't know. I don't know what the variables were. I don't know what the numbers were. But as time, I'm being illuminated to what this thing requires, right? This ingredient list.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know what it is, but I know there's ingredients and it's different for everybody. Yeah. But in that, I think in the first position was, whatever you do, it's like, make sure it's, you're honoring your parents, you know, mm-hmm. it's like in the sense of like, I have to make this work because it's like, we don't have anything, you know, yeah. it's like my parents did sacrifice a tremendous amount of,
yeah.
you name it, you know, the list can go on. They've sacrificed so much, and now I'm giving them the most gnarliest of blows of saying, he's like, hey, I'm just going to talk about mustard on stage for 15 minutes. And then it's like, well, how does that help our situation, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was literally the biggest driving force. And then, you know, caregiving, you know, seeing that my parents' health wasn't in good shape, it's like I also missed out on a lot of opportunities that didn't align. It's like I didn't miss out on anything. It's like I want to go back. There were certain situations I couldn't be a part of because of my situation, which I wish I could have been a part of, but it's like now I know that that wasn't meant for me. You know, right. It's like I was still able to find it a different way.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is challenging. It's like most comedians kind of have this like yeah, I didn't have the hangout aspect as much as I wanted to. I couldn't go to New York.
Yeah.
You know, to follow this this dream that I had of like work in New York. You know, it's like that's
yeah.
You know, you're either LA or New York. You know, I feel even now, it's like I kind of missed that window in New York. Comedy scene is like a young man's game.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, it requires a certain kind of like freedom that I think as I'm getting older, it's like I can always visit, I can always go work and that kind of thing. But that window, that experience, it wasn't for me. And that's okay because I've been able to find a version of that in LA, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And share a little bit about... I think this isn't so much for like westernized Americans, mm-hmm. but there, and it used to be a European thing, but the cultural responsibility, because I would say there's just people that were born and raised here multiple generations, they don't have the same sense of like, oh, I need to take care of my parents. Share a little bit about that. That, because I think it's a really beautiful way to like look at taking care of, you know, the family kind yeah. of thing. And I know in India, it's very much still that way, like taking care of, you think about your parents, not just about your kids kind of thing.
Yeah. I think, you know, from my experience, it definitely is a cultural thing. You know, it's, I know Indian culture is very much aligned in my Mexican-American roots in the way that they look at their elders, you know, even Asian, like yeah. different Asian cultures, yeah. you know. But yeah, it is interesting. And yeah, I saw my mother, you know, take care of her parents, you know, yeah. my grandparents. And I saw that it was like, you know, she did it at a time, you know, just out of the goodness of her heart, you know. Later, she was able to get hired as a care worker, you know. But you know, she would do it for sure without any pay. You know, yeah. it was just like, is there expectations? Sure, you know, there's a level of that. But I know that just because of how my mom was, but I do see that recurring. Sentiment with different elders in our community. As they get older, they take care of their parents, and as this generation gets older, they take care of that. So it's like it's a domino effect over time of like you care for your elders, and
yeah.
It's just the way it is. And I'm, you know, it's like there's challenges, there's difficulties for sure, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I think it's very fulfilling, very cool, yeah. very it's almost like I've talked about this before, where it's like it's a relay race where you pass a baton from one generation to the other. You know, it's like your mother is there to see you into this world, and you know, it's like, and then you know, hopefully you're there to kind of, you know, soften the landing and kind of pass a baton, you know, get the baton passed to you when
yeah.
you lay your loved one to rest. You know, it's like this odd. You know, yeah, life things.
Cycle.
Yeah, cycle. Exactly. It's an odd but natural cycle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how having your grandparents around, how did that impact you? Do you feel?
I think having my grandparents around, it was very complicated. My, you know, my family life is quite complicated. You know, as most families are, it's like, people always say, I want a normal, like, what is normal? Normal is weird, you know? It's like,
yeah.
But it was complicated, but I did get to meet my mom's parents, you know, my grandparents. I didn't get to meet on my dad's side. But, you know, having them around, you know, growing up was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they're very loving in their own way. And yeah, just like seeing them, it was like, you know, again, my grandfather was just very funny. He was so funny.
Yeah.
Very, very smart, you know. Also, you know, did not have much of an education, but I mean, you could just see that he had a different amount of brain fluid than most people, you know. Yeah. It was just like, wow. I was like, you know, he would build a bird nest. He would build like these boxes to like dry out meat, like for carne seca,
yeah.
Kind of thing. And there were these like really cool boxes with the, like, and I'm like, how did he do any of that without knowing numbers? And
yeah,
and it was like it was so perfect. And he would reuse like old pallets or whatever he can find. So he was very much recycling and kind of repurposing, bringing new life to things that were quote unquote like discarded. And he found a new, you know, birdhouses kind of thing. And I was just like, man, how, you know, my grandmother, amazing cook. It was really cool. And then seeing my mom take care of them, you know, it's like my mom was very much a fusion of, obviously, my, you know, my grandparents and stuff. You could see the heart. My mom, I felt like so sweet, so smart, an amazing cook, you know. So I got to see why my mom was the way she was. It was because of my grandparents. You know?
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
And a little deeper relationship versus, you know, them just passing by a little bit, you know.
I spent, you know, quite some time with my grandparents, you know. It's like, my mom would make it a point to go down there and make sure that we had a relationship, you know, despite the complexities of family.
Yeah.
You know, she wanted to make a point to make sure I had them in my life.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. And your humor, now we have the roots of it all.
Yeah.
You're legitimately funny.
Oh, thank you.
And not that I'm, you know, the person that gets to gold stamp you, but you're funny.
I think
comedians, I mean, people laugh, so that's how you know if you're funny, right?
I guess that's kind of a sign, because you don't know if they're laughing at you or with you, but it's like, I'll take it, whatever it is.
So when you started to develop your style, I think you said to me once in passing that your friend reflected to you, you make funny out of the little things, like has that always been your style, or did it develop, or where did that develop from?
I think my comedy, definitely, like, a big part of it is derived from being an only child, you know. It's like you're almost forced to have this bigger than normal imagination, I feel like. You know, imaginary friends or, you know, that kind of thing. I joke about it in my act. Early on, I talked a lot about, like, personal stuff, like my mom this, my mom that, you know. I was an only child. I'm, you know, I talk about my community, it's like I'm a Mexican only child, you know. I was like, how rare is that, you know? So I felt like it was always personal, like I always, for some reason, I later found out to my benefit, was always personal, you know, because I felt like that was jokes that other performers couldn't take on, you know. It was original to me. People got to know who I was by the time they got off stage. If they don't remember nothing else, they could use maybe the jokes without even knowing to, like, oh, that was the, you know, the tall Mexican guy, the only child. It's like, that was it. You know, so if I could get them to leave and remember a little bit of who I was, I felt like that would be helpful. But I always wanted to do, like, silly stuff. I never went into too much, you know. Yeah, I never really went down the dirty route. I mean, I'm sure you experiment to, you know, find who you are on stage, but it's like, it really hasn't been my core substance of, like, it was always like, you know, like one of my favorite jokes or premises that I've explored on stage is like this whole long joke about muffins, you know, a mustard bottle. Everything started with a mustard bottle. You know, it's like, I like the ability to be able to dream big, have it be grounded in reality, but you know, you use the mechanics of comedy to exaggerate, to bring life to inanimate objects. Like, you know, I have one of the, like, one of the jokes I really enjoy telling is like, that I don't know the difference between an air fryer and an air purifier. And just this like insane story, but it's like, I kind of like making funny. So it's like, I still feel like there's elements of myself, like being autobiographical, like, but it's more of like this kind of, you know, it's like Dolly, like I hope to one day be like tap into whatever Dolly was doing, you know. It's like this kind of outside thinking, like like I look at that and I'm like, oh man, how does one ever get there,
right?
You know, but it's like, it's fun, it's yeah. fun to dream in that way. So I think my humor is just me trying to fill time with the most minutiae things, you know.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've done some cause related humor, and maybe you don't do dirty humor, but you do dark humor a little bit.
Yeah.
Around death and different causes. How has that been received with the audience?
I think traditionally I have, like in my time, in my 17 years, like I've talked about caregiving on stage. I've talked about like, you know, health problems, you know, it's like dealing with cancer and, you know, my father's cancer, you know, it's like my mom's health journey, you know, through dementia and this kind of thing. And I found that initially it was hard, right? Initially it was hard because it's like, you're not experienced, you know. I wasn't as mature then as a writer and performer as I am now, but you learn it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like my first special, we talked about like a lot of things of like my dad and you know, his health journey and, you know, this power of attorney thing that we were dealing with at the time, you know, how difficult that may be. And you know, sometimes you, like, if you look at the special, it could be boiled down just to a simple one-liner, but that one-liner was very loaded. The context is so much bigger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, I do enjoy joking about these things because I found that when I go on the road, I'm finding my community, you know, people who have gone through loss or caregiving or situations like that. Like, I remember going on stage and, you know, talking about my mother's passing when I was in San Francisco, and there was this gentleman, and at the time we had just lost our pup. You know, it's like a month before we lost our pup, and then, you know, my mother's passing, and it was just kind of a weird time, and I had to go on stage, and I'm like, well, what else do I talk about? It's like, this is it's here. I feel like it needs, and like I needed to loosen up my escape valve, you know. It's like, just let a little bit of the pressure off, you know. It's like this pressure cooker of like, you gotta let the steam out a little bit. And I was able to get some laughs and be able to tell it in a way that I felt proud and where I'm not like making fun of it, but I'm, you know, exploring the situation on stage. There was a gentleman that came up to me after the show, unlikely guy, you know, tall, almost like this, you know, leather jacket, big muscles, kind of this this guy that you wouldn't want to mess with, basically.
Right.
And he comes up and, you know, he goes like this. He has a bunch of these, like, silver, you know, rings and the wallet chain and big boots, like the whole works. This guy was just massive. And I'm 6'3", and I'm looking up at this guy, you know. And he goes, hey, man, I just lost my dog. My mother just passed away. He goes, I laughed. Mm. And he just kind of just kept, he locked eyes with me, and, you know, he was nodding, and I'm like, he's going to whoop my ass, what's going on, you know? But he would just like, you know, he kind of did one of these on the shoulder and was like, thank you, man. He's like, keep doing that. Like, in his limited way, in his own way, he was like, I realized that I made such a meaningful connection with this gentleman. Yeah. I don't know his name. I wish I would have gotten his name. But, you know, I found that when you talk about, you know, something that's true to you, in this case, it's like talking about these darker things. Sure, not everybody was laughing in that room, but it's like the right people maybe heard and got the response they needed out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Being that I work with death, I think it's good to have laughter. Yeah. I think it's
important. Do you find that that sometimes you're met with this kind of pushback when
Yeah, especially if I visit clients in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And what I had one woman, she was so sweet, and just watching, this was a process like with the family. So we were all on the journey together till she passed, and she and I were cracking up in the hospital room, and the doctor came in. He was so incensed. He's like, and I looked at him, and he was trying to be so serious, and I go, but our laughter was contagious. And I just looked at him. I go, yes, we know she's dying. I go, you look so much better with a smile. I go, don't you want her to remember you that way? But he was so like not used to, like, wow, you have to be serious around people that are dying. But I'm like, shouldn't we laugh all the way to the end? Like, I'm glad that I have those memories.
How do you handle something like that when you get the pushback of, like, maybe, you know, I think your line of work and my line of work are different but yet so similar.
Yeah.
How do you deal with somebody who doesn't, I guess, embrace your outlook the way you do?
Just sometimes it's a timing thing, you know, or like create a little pause because, but you know, like, oh, that you probably on stages like that, like if it's not going the right way, you're like, okay, I gotta make some space and turn it in another direction. So yeah, but people usually lighten up once you give them permission that it's okay to laugh, especially about death, like, because you're either going to cry or you might as well laugh a little and enjoy the person even afterwards. I think it's really good when people like get to laugh and reminisce and because people act crazy at towards the end of someone's life, especially if it's terminal. It's amazing because everyone's mortality is challenged, like their own relationship to death. Right. So they start acting out. Like it's pretty comical. You could have a lot of great material.
There's a lot of great material. You are correct. Yeah. Some of it I'm like, oh, even now, I don't know if I'm mature enough to take it on stage. You know, it's like, you know, but you're right. It's like, I think when you're dealing with somebody's last moments, I think the journey goes inward, and it starts to kind of resurface maybe old traumas and this kind of thing. So it's not so much a reflection of the person who's passing, but the person who's dealing with the passing.
Yeah,
you start to get it's like, oh, I'm seeing a whole other side of this person. I don't know. It was in there the whole time. It's like, oh, man. It's like, and then other people you just see, you know, that although it's like a tough, weak moment, like not weak, but it's like, it's a tough moment is that you can see like somebody's strength, you know, in that moment is like, wow, what great strength, you know? And other people you're like, oh man, that was in there the whole time. It's like, oh, okay. Noted. Yeah, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, so, and with your comedy and your life experiences, so you've seen a lot, because some people don't even get to see, like, death, a personal death, till much later in life.
Yeah, more than I would like, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's not something people, like, go out and seek for.
Yeah.
From here forward, do you feel like you'll incorporate more of that, or you don't know, or does it erode that you're creation?
That's a great question. You know, it's like, if I'm being honest, it's like I've come to the realization that I think, you know, we try to kind of like, it's almost like books, right? It's like, well, at least personally, it's like I look at stand-up like first specials, you know. It's like I did my first special was this, and then this next one is, you know the practicing one I just put out on YouTube late last year. It was more of like my personal healthcare, self-care journey, you know. But I realized that, you know, these are almost like slices of the life in between specials for a comic. you find out what was happening with them, you know. And it's like, where do you get your material from? It's like, well, you got to live life. And in between, when you're making jokes about a slice of cheesecake, you know, life happens.
Yeah.
And that needs to be addressed along with that joke of a slice of cheesecake, because that's the palette that I want to work with. But, you know, I am oftentimes given a palette that I'm not forced to work with, but I get to work with, you know, that I don't know that I would have seeked, you know, a situation where I have to talk about death or you know, terminal disease. But, you know, that palette is given to me, and I'm surprised what I can put together sometimes, you know, for better or for worse. I mean, sometimes it's like you find out that I don't, like, you create this piece and you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to tell it anymore. And I'm at liberty to do that, you know, but I do get to attempt and create with palettes that I normally would not seek.
Yeah, beautiful. Makes it a little easier.
Yeah.
I mean, not the creation part, but at least you have your box of paints that are presented to you.
Exactly, yeah. It does make it a lot easier, you're right.
Yeah.
Because it's like I am better, I'm a better writer and performer because of it. Because I know what colors work, what colors I feel like I can mix on stage or in my writing, and yeah, it's better to have that knowledge than not.
Yeah, beautiful. And so you have a kid's book.
Yeah.
And do you have a second one coming out? When is that coming out?
So the second one comes out in September 10th. It's on a Tuesday.
Okay.
So that comes out September 10th, and I'm excited. The first one was really cool. You know, I was able to write this. The book is called Papa's Magical Water Jug Clock, and it's based on my upbringing of working landscaping with my dad. And then, you know,
it's cute amazing.
Thank you. Cute little joke in there, inside joke my dad and I had. So it's really cool. We got the Pour a Bill Pray honor, which is one of the highest honors you can get in kids' literature. Pour a Bill Pray was the first Latina librarian in the New York public library system to incorporate Spanish language books into the system, into a U.S. library system. So very honored to have gotten the honor as an author, and also the illustrator, Eliza Kinks, got the same honor for... And it's like we have double honors, and I you know, we talked about it. It's like it would have been amazing to get it for one or the other, but the fact that we... Our frequencies were matched in this kind of collaboration is like, there's something there. And I'm excited that this second book is going to be that. And so the first one is dedicated to my dad, and the second one to my mother. And it's called Mama's Magnificent Dancing Plantitas.
Oh, so nice. It's, I love it.
Yeah, it's based on a, what do you call it? Like a pothos plant. You know what I'm talking about? Like, very, like, they grow on these long vines.
Yeah.
So I have this plant that my mom had before I was born.
Oh,
and we propagated it, and we still have two plants.
Wow.
And they're massive. They grow so much. I remember when I was a kid, she had the original one. So it was before I was born. So by the time I was, like, I don't know, like, under 10 years old for sure, we were living in this Long Beach Magnolia apartment on Fifth Street. And, this plant went around this, like, living room space into, like, the kitchen table area. And it felt like it was giving, like, the home a big hug. And
I've kept it.
My dad has both plants now. But we have a very special thing planned for September with the book release. And those specific plants, which I would love to tell you more. I'm sure we'll get together and jam out again. But
okay, that's special. Beautiful. Yeah.
You got to be there for it, too.
I want to be there.
I have the very special thing planned. I'll tell you more about it, but it's going to be really cool.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll put the link to the first book. And it's, I think I told you, it reminds me, well, the book doesn't, but there's so much to look at visually. It reminds me of the Richard Scarry as an author from, like, I guess the 70s or 80s. But there's so much, like, kids cannot get bored looking at your book. Because it's like there's so much to explore.
Yeah.
And little treasures to find in there. And the story is great, too.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted it to be like one of that, like, you know that little section in Highlight magazines, which was one of my favorite magazines as a kid?
Yeah.
Where you find, like, the paintbrush that's embedded into, like, the sofa. Like, those So it was, you know, Eliza King's just, she's an amazing artist through and through. We just work so well together. I respect her work. And I remember early on, that was the only thing I was like, I want it to be a thing where a kid would lose track of time. Even after knowing the story and reading the story, just looking at the pictures, because that's what I did as a kid.
You know?
Once you read it once, you're like, I got it. I just want to kind of look at the pictures and revisit the book.
Absolutely. So, well done.
Thank you.
I get good, you're getting good feedback loops with that. But, so you're a children's author too, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you break into the kids' comedy scene with the little ones? Or, like, not little ones, maybe adolescents, preteens, teens?
Like, comedy scene, like stand-up, you mean? Like, that kind of thing? I haven't really. You know, it's like, it's a different muscle. You know, you're dealing... Like, I have done shows, and they haven't gone too great. You know, it's just... it's a different
they might frame of reference. At you versus with you, kind of
thing. It's like... Well, but like believe me, I feel like a younger audience and I have the same sense of humor. It's fart sounds and this kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm on board, you guys. But, you know, in stand-up as an art form, it's like, it's challenging. Not that it can be done, but it's a little more challenging. You know, you're dealing with different frames of reference, not as much lived experience. So it's hard to kind of make that connection from the stage. So it's more of like, in the moment, you know, funny things. But I have found in live readings of the book, the more animated I get, you know, with the book and this kind of thing, like, kids seem to be on board. And they've really, like, we've done live readings at different book festivals, and the kids are like on board, and posing questions as I read the book has always been very helpful, I find. There's a part where it's like, you know, the little kid is asking the dad in the book, is like, are you going to fire me? And I usually ask him, like, you guys think he's going to get fired? And the kids are like very passionate, no. Or some kids be like, yes, he's out of here. And they're like, well, let's find out. And then, you know, it's like, so I do find that that's where the humor comes in when you tap into that interactiveness. But
good.
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah. It's been good. So it's like, I think a lot of the, like, there was a joke in there that I had from my muffin joke that I did on the Tonight Show. I added the one-liner because it was like kind of like a tip of the hat to that, like, the work that has got me there. And I think the joke is so funny, but I gotta tell you, I have not gotten one laugh out of kids when I do the readings out of that line. And I think that line is like so funny, which is, it's like, do you think muffins wear corduroys?
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's so funny. It's part of the routine. Obviously, it's written differently, but the kids are just like, all right, what's the next part of the book? It's like, you guys, let's... there's another one where I say, in the book, there's a joke. I said, can we agree that burritos are duffel bags full of toppings? Not a peep out of the kids. Like,
well, I think that's your, you know, good kids' movies have humor for the parents.
Yes.
And the kids. Yeah, so I think those liners are for the adults reading the book.
100%. You're right. Yeah.
So I think that's helpful. Having raised kids, like, because when you go to those movies, you're just like, okay, this is like, nice.
Yeah.
But when they can be funny for the grown-ups and the kids, maybe at different moments.
Which is kind of fun, too, because as you get older and you're still like, you're not quite a kid, but you're not quite a teen, and you're watching these movies and you start to get different references, you're like, oh my God, nobody else got that. So it is fun, right? For the kids or for the adults, and that in-between stage too, where it's like, if they happen to read it, you're like, oh my God, a little something there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So when you're touring now still, do you give yourself a break?
I try to. Actually, this week I was supposed to be on tour in Atlanta, but there's no tickets sold, so we pulled the plug ahead of time, which is great because I get time off. It's like, I think like other people are like, oh my God, like, that's a bummer. It's like, oh no, it's okay. You know? It's like, I much rather recharge my batteries.
And,
so most people get upset when they cancel shows. I get quite happy. I'm like, great, you know, I get to stay home and write and, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I am on tour. I'm going to be in Janesville. No, I'm going to be at South by Southwest this weekend.
Okay.
Starting Sunday to into the week, I forget. Austin, and I'll be in Janesville, Wisconsin, Comedy Cabin. I'll be at the Tempe Improv coming up. Let's see, I'll be in Comedy Zone, right, in Charlotte. And I'll be in Greensboro, North Carolina as well. And yeah, I got a bunch of dates coming up. All the dates could be found in JesusTrejo.com.
Okay, perfect.
You can see the whole list of shows there. But yeah, a lot of cool shows happening. And I have a docuseries coming out this fall with PBS.
We went across
the country meeting with different comedians, 6 episodes. It's a docuseries. And it's called The Roots of Comedy with Jesus Trejo. So I'm quite excited to showcase some of my friends and some new comics I got to meet along the way. And it was a very special journey. I learned so much. I feel I'm better on the other side of it for traveling and, you know, getting to know these comedians and their families and traveling through the country and, you know, spending a significant time in different places outside of what I know. You know, usually, you know, I'm born and raised here in Long Beach and I go on the road. I'm most every weekend I'm in a different city, but it's basically in and out. I'm there for no more than 2 to 3 days.
Right.
But to spend weeks in a different place, it's like you really get to learn a lot. And, you know, this show will be coming out very soon. So it's like there'll be a, you heard it here first, because they're going to do a release. They're going to do
a premiere of it?
Yeah, they're going to do a premiere, but I forget when they like announce it on the website, like a Hollywood like Variety, but so they haven't even announced it, but they're about to, so.
Okay. We won't get in trouble.
Yeah. No, we're fine. It's already, the ball's moving and I'm excited for people to check it out. I think it'll be really, really cool. So it's
and who is your favorite comedian? Do you have a favorite outside of yourself? Or inspires you?
Not myself. I'm not my favorite comic. I'm like, how's this guy still working? You know? Wow. There's so many. I think I was brought up, you know, Spanish was my first language. So it's like the Mexican comedian. There's a guy by the name of Chespirito. Mm. He played all these sketch shows. Like he, you know, the premise of one of the shows was it was this this poor kid, homeless kid, basically. And he lived in a neighborhood, like in the quad of this apartment building, and he lived in a wooden barrel. You know, he would just go in there and hide. And his sole purpose in life was to get a ham sandwich. You know, as I got older, I'm like, wow, it's like such a it pulls the heartstrings. But you know, he became friends with all the kids in the in that apartment complex. Mm-hmm. It was like this single mother that was out dating. Had a kid and they were like arch nemesis but friends. There was a single father who had a daughter and they became like the best friends of, you know, ever. So it's like there are all these characters. So his name was Chespirito. He used to be a soccer player turned playwright, and that's why his name was, he was such an amazing playwright that they called him Little Shakespeare. He was a tiny guy, so Chespirito, Little Shakespeare. Cantinflas, I like Cantinflas, India Maria, which was an Mexican indigenous woman that would get herself into all kinds of trouble. Lauren Hardy, that was always like, Buster Keaton was huge for me, Three Stooges. And then as stand-up, it's like, I love Brian Regan. Richard Pryor is top for me just because he was able to, you know, like we were talking about earlier, take the saddest or life sometimes awful things that are handed to us and turn it into the most funniest into the funniest comedy act that one could see with that subject matter, you know. So Richard Pryor for sure. Brian Regan is a big one for me. J.B. Smoove, Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, Wanda Sykes, I think is very funny. Sarah Silverman I like. It's like Don Rickles, I think, was really cool because he was able to be very quick. Sam Kinison, Bill Hicks, I think, is amazing. Freddie Soto, God rest his soul. He was a comic from El Paso that was at the Comedy Store. And just, you know, I relate so much to his work just because he talked about his dad a lot and, you know, his parents and stuff. So, let's see. Yeah, there's so many. Jim Gaffigan, I really enjoy. it goes on and on.
That's beautiful. I love that you celebrate so many.
So many, yeah. It could be just an hour of us saying names, you know.
It's like the list will run out on the board.
Yeah, Ian Edwards.
Yeah, that's good. So, and if you, I mean, you have a lot on your plate. Do you have other, like, goals within your repertoire of being a comedian that you, or aspirations, or gonna see what arrives and what you...
Yeah, I think I'd like to continue writing. I think writing has opened so many doors for me, whether it's in the screenwriting space or I like to do more of that. I really enjoy screenwriting, you know, writing books. I really enjoy stand-up specials. I really enjoy, but, you know, I do want to keep myself open to any opportunities that I, you know, haven't put in my mental list and would enjoy, you know, but yeah, I just want to keep, I guess my North Star is comedy, you know, whatever, whichever that star is, I'll walk in that direction and partake and experience, you know, anything that's along the way.
Mm, yeah. Beautiful. Well, I keep hearing variety show in my head, so maybe you're going to be in a variety show. Oh, I don't know.
They're going to announce it pretty soon in Variety, so yeah.
Maybe. Oh, it could be that. But I mean, if a variety, not just comedy.
Oh, okay. I see what
like
you're saying.
Like a variety show.
Oh, cool.
you know, like,
that would be cool.
I don't know. It's in my head. So we'll see how that manifests. But I really appreciate you spending the time.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy. Thank you for all your. Positive energy and your welcoming energy, you know. It's like I've always felt very welcomed, you know. It's like we met at, you know, the sound bath class that I've taken the yoga stuff, and it's been really cool. I really appreciate your energy and your heart. You have a very amazing heart. Thank you for embracing my fiance and I and for your guidance. I really, like, I'm not just saying this. I know I talk my ass off on this thing, but I enjoy our conversations, and I don't take them lightly. I really enjoy them, and I respect what you're doing.
Thank you.
I think you're amazing. Your kids are so lucky to have energy like yourself in one's life. You know, it's like, I'm sure they're aware of it, but it's like.
Yeah.
You're the real deal. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I feel like we're by happenstance on the outro here that your mom brought like us to know each other. You know, you feel like a soul family member, so can't really explain it, but I'm happy to know you and celebrate your great work. So
likewise. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Once again, I want to thank you all for listening in, and thank you, Jesus, for being here. Please support his creation. Hit him up at when he's on the road, on tour. The links are below. Purchase his kids' book in English and Spanish. Share the wealth. And until next time, this is Suzanne signing out with a full heart, a soft gaze, a deep bow, and a namaste. Be simply.
When we speak, we aim to please. Dress our words up to the T in hopes to impress. If they disagree, or maybe they just don't see. Don't let it cause you stress. 'Cause I got a little secret for you, and it's one less thing that you got. Thank you. feel. Keep it local, keep it real. Don't tell me what they wanna hear, just tell me how.